scores! Gilmore scores! The ball, three left!
Off the glass, it looks corner to Aginla. Aginla the left circle. Passing to Yell, a shot. Save made by Yell. Aginla, rebound, double shot. They score! The Flames win it! Yeah, baby!
They score!
Starts now on Sportsnet 960 The Fan. Here's Pat Steinberg.
All right, this hour of Flames Talk is underway. It is Wednesday, December 18th. Steinberg along with you on Apple, Spotify, Amazon, Seeker, or wherever you get your podcasts here on Flames Talk. This hour, the Sports Drive brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockAndSafe.com. We have got plenty to get to on this hour of Flames Talk, including a trade in the NHL on this Wednesday. And we'll get to all of that and more with our NHL insider. It's time to say hello to Frank Saravalli, brought to you by South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit SouthTrailChrysler.com. And Frank joins us now from Daily Faceoff, DailyFaceoff.com, Amazon, and a whole lot more. Hello, Frank. How are you on this Wednesday?
I'm doing pretty good, Pat. I'm tired. I'm limping into the holidays.
Well, I mean, we're approaching the midway mark of an insider season. Like, yeah, it's been a run for you, my friend. So hopefully you get a little bit of time to rest and recharge for the holidays. What do the holidays look like for Frank?
We are hosting Christmas Eve at our house, so we'll have about 20 people.
Okay.
Just enough to make you like slightly nervous. Make sure you have enough food and everything looks good. So yeah, I'm sure I'll be handed a very long list of things to do this weekend.
What's on the menu?
Well, I was working on some appetizers today. We're gonna do some cheesesteak egg rolls.
Okay.
We've got some pot stickers. We've got. Are you even having a party if you don't have the little hors d'oeuvres hot dogs, the little Franks?
Okay.
And trying to think what else is on the list. We got a good salad. We got a shrimp tray, an antipasta tray. I mean, we got a lot of things going.
Okay. Well, I'll be there around 7 o'clock. I'm looking forward to it.
Is it in your neighborhood?
Yeah, it's right in my backyard. It's right in my backyard. So I'll take a quick little hop, skip and a jump and I'll be there.
I forgot one thing. We also have buffalo chicken egg rolls.
Okay. You've got some.
And none of those things pair with the actual dinner, which is like all Italian food, chicken parm, pasta.
Well, I was going to say like the antipasti here is not, it's not very Italiano, but the main course, the actual dinner is a little more Italian.
Yeah. And it's very informal. I'll have it all set up catering style. People will be in and out and you can pop in, get a plate and hang out.
Any baked ziti? I love me a good baked ziti. That's one of my
absolute
favorites.
I'm not a big ziti guy.
No, hey.
Doesn't do it for me.
Okay. Chicken parm sounds great. We just saw Elias Lindholm through here on Tuesday night with the Boston Bruins. And, you know, it got me thinking this morning. That's kind of the last guy who's come through Calgary. Lindholm, when he got traded in January, had yet to come through Calgary since being traded. And it was like, geez, that's like the last guy to come through. We'd seen all the other names come through at some form or another. And I guess not every single one of them, but Hanifin's been here and now Lindholm comes through, and that was kind of the one that started the mass exodus in the back half of last season. So I thought I'd kick things off with you today by getting you to maybe reflect a little bit and take a little bit of a bigger picture view, going all the way back to the summer of 2023 when the Tyler Toffoli trade started a lot of the moves that Craig Conroy's had to make over the last 18 months. How do you evaluate all those moves, even starting to take into account Jacob Markstrom, Andrew Mangiapane? Like, it has been a busy first 18 months for Craig Conroy on the job.
Yeah, and I think he finally got to this past summer after getting through free agency and was like, oh, I can finally get a week where my hair isn't on fire. I mean, I guess what's left of it, poor Connie. But look, there's been a lot happening, and he put out a lot of fires and spent a long time evaluating and understanding the market and what the market would bear for all those guys that moved on. And I think individually there were probably some deals that Flames fans were disappointed in, felt like in the exact moment in time that they didn't get enough. And I stressed the entire time, and I'll remain true to that, that it's all about the sum of the parts. It's all about the sum of, you know, from start to finish, from Toffoli all the way on through to the last guy traded, you know, what does that complete package look like? And so they've really gone about retooling kind of their entire system. They're loaded with draft picks. They've got young players who are graduating and on the cusp of, you know, now becoming full-time NHLers. The Wranglers team looks good. And I would argue that for a million reasons, but one of which, and the chief of which being that the group of guys that they have now is a group that wants to be there,
mm-hmm.
that the Flames are in a hell of a lot better space than they were then.
The whole idea of Craig Conroy gearing down the noise to start this year, like he was really adamant about, hey, these veterans that are left, we're not moving them. They're a part of this, and we want them to help get us from point A to point B. They're going to be really important in terms of getting us on our path. How much do you think him and those veterans as well, quieting the noise, how much do you think that's played into some of the success the Flames have had this year?
I think it's played a huge role. Like, I think when you consider just the cohesion that exists, the feeling, the attitude, the energy, the want to be at the rink and spend time around each other, like, I don't want to say that there were, like, I don't think at all that there were any bad actors or any bad characters. It's just that it's probably a pretty natural thing that when you have guys that are starting to look ahead to whatever the future looks like, that you begin to get a little bit splintered.
Mm-hmm.
And it becomes, hey, this is about what's good for me, what's good for my family, what's good for whatever happens next, as opposed to, hey, let's try and help this team win in this moment. And I think when one person is thinking about that, or two people, that's probably pretty natural on any given team, because at any varying cycle during a season, you've got guys that are unhappy, you've got guys that are happy. It probably shifts within a week, and everyone's all over the place. But when you've got more than a quarter of your team, approaching a third of your team, that not only is potentially unhappy, but looking over their shoulder and wondering who's next, and has basically made it clear that they don't want to be part of it and aren't willing to entertain a deal, a new extension,
mm-hmm.
that probably creates some, not chaos, but it creates an environment where not everyone's focused on pulling on the rope at the same time.
I do think, and just talking to some, you know, whether it be players or people around this group, I really do think that that's gone a long way in being able to then, hey, we're just here to play hockey. Let's go out and prove some people wrong. And I think that's gone a long way in doing that. My question, and kind of the last one I'd ask you on the Flames for this week, is knowing all of that, like, do we, as we move into the second half of the season, into a new calendar year, do some of these veterans that the Flames currently have, and knowing that this team still does want to get younger and is still building for something larger and bigger picture, do some of those veteran names start getting asked about by other teams? Like, do all of a sudden, is Craig Conroy taking more phone calls about some of those veteran guys as we move closer to the trade deadline?
Well, I think you're always taking phone calls, and I think you're always, you know, taking on as much intel as you can. And I do think that the calls will pick up because I think the market is relatively limited. And I think there's, you know, enough guys on this team that are highly thought of that, you know, starting with Rasmus Anderson and, you know, we've already heard Nazem Kadri's name out there and others. I don't have any indication that at this moment in time, the Flames are interested in entertaining those conversations, but it's no different than the calls that Craig Conroy would be making around the league, which is just registering interest.
Right.
Hey, if you do decide to move this guy, give me a ring. Or, hey, if you get to a place where you're willing to consider some different things, let's talk because I like player X. And make no mistake, Craig Conroy is doing the same thing about a bunch of other players around the league that are on other teams. And it's laying the groundwork. It's developing or continuing to work on a relationship and get some information, some points out there, and also take in some. Hey, what is this team looking for? Is this a potential trade partner? Is this something where we can sit down with our pro scouting staff or our management team and say, hey, yeah, there's some pieces on your roster that we like, and maybe this is a fit. And you don't broadcast that, but you do that as much as you can all internally. And yeah, I think it'd be unnatural for those conversations to not be had. I just don't think we're there yet. And right. I also don't know. It's going to be interesting to see how many teams would actually be compatible with the Flames from a pure trade partner standpoint. Like, the Flames are trying to add, not subtract. And I mean, they could work themselves into a position where they're subtracting, but right now they want to add, and they want to add younger players in that 20 to 24, 25 age range at specific positions to check specific positional boxes. And no one wants to give up those players right now. Other teams are trying to add. So unless there's a hockey trade, which is such a dumb term on its face, unless there's something out there that is a clean swap that both sides could, you know, work their way into, that's going to be the way more interesting question, is how many other teams are on a parallel path with the Flames or frankly going in the opposite direction where there would be a fit.
Right. We're chatting with Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. And we did get news on this Thursday. A trade has been made, and that trade involves Kaapo Kakko and the New York Rangers. He goes from New York to Seattle. Will Borgen and some picks going back the other way to the Rangers. I guess your reaction to Kaapo Kakko, a former second overall pick of the New York Rangers, being dealt to Seattle. How do we get here? How do we get to this point?
Well, the Rangers have been pretty clear that, or I should say, the thought has been pretty clear out there that Kaapo Kakko's very pointed criticism of his healthy scratch, followed by the way, his second lowest ice time of his Ranger career last night. Some would say that, hey, those things aren't connected, that his criticism of Peter Laviolette and the scratching and the ice time, like, that doesn't have anything to do with the trade. I would draw a side eye to that and say probably at least had something to do with pulling the trigger on that. That said, I'm probably going to end up being in the minority here, but I really like this deal from the Rangers' perspective because I don't know that Will Borgen has gotten enough attention. Like, he's one of those under-the-radar guys that not everyone will be talking about, but he's just solid. Like, there's nothing incredibly flashy about his game, but he turned himself into a guy that when you need to can play top 4 minutes, and the rest of the time is like a sight unseen, unheard third pair guy that just shows up and does his work every day. And I know that's not number two overall hype or sexiness, but, and I know he's older, but you get some picks back in addition to it. And I also just think the style of play that Borgen has, which is again, not a turnover machine, very steady. You could argue with the chaos that's been in the Rangers' own end, it's also exactly that type of player that they need. So Kako, I think, unfortunately found himself in a spot where he really, really regressed last year. He went from 40 points down to 19. And they also were getting to a spot where he's a pending RFA, a year away from UFA. They weren't likely going to commit long-term. So that said, isn't now the time to rip the Band-Aid off and make a move?
The entire plight of the New York Rangers, like where they are right now, they've already dealt Jacob Trouba. We know how that went over, and we know how that went over on the Trouba side of things. You know, Peter Laviolette, lots of people talking about his job being in danger, so on and so forth. What is happening in New York? How have things gone so sour so quickly for this Rangers group?
I think it all starts with the Chris Drury message to 31 other teams at a moment in time when the Rangers had a 12-7-1 record and were firmly in the playoffs, that they now just they can't get out of their own head. And it's almost like he is now dismantling this piece by piece, starting with Jacob Trouba, then Kaapo Kakko, guys that have been there for a while. I mean, this was Kakko's sixth NHL season. So not even, you know, even though he said, oh, it's easy to pick on the young guy and take him out of the lineup, like 6 years into your NHL career, 330 games, I'm sorry, bud, you're no longer the young guy. Look, how did we get here? This is probably a study in like the psyche of the modern day pro athlete. They're talked about, they're scrutinized, they're all in the trade block, kind of outside of Shesterkin and Lafreniere. And now what's next? How does this team find a way to screw its head on straight on the other side of the holidays? And maybe that's the perfect time to take a break that clearly has the talent to play themselves back into the playoffs in a year in which there were some expectations for this team to be right in the mix for a Stanley Cup.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's been just a bizarre last few weeks when it comes to that team. And then just a little west of them, or a lot west of them, probably, you know, in their backyard. But the Buffalo Sabres, just a complete mess as well. An 11th consecutive loss on Tuesday, and it was not close. This comes after you reported on the meeting that Kevin Adams and owner Terry Pegula had with the Sabres. Now what? Clearly no response. Was it you who put, you put gulp last night, quoted your own tweet. Now what? Like what? Where do the Sabres go here?
I don't know. And I have to say that in doing my reporting about the meeting on Monday in Montreal, where owner Terry Pegula flies up to talk to and address the team, that even just as it was relayed to me by team sources, I kind of felt like I was writing for The Onion. Like, Kevin Adams acknowledges before the season started that this is go time. He knows in year five that his predecessor only got 3 years in Jason Botterill, and they're carrying, until the New York Jets missed the playoffs this year, the longest playoff drought in North American pro sports. And you start poorly, you claw your way back into a playoff spot just before U.S. Thanksgiving, and the wheels fall off, and you lose 10 straight. You have this meeting where it's so positive with your owner. He says, "We believe in you. The solution is within this room." And he professed his faith for Kevin Adams and Lindy Ruff and saying, "Hey, by the way, don't expect a big trade. This, everything we need is right here. Kevin Adams has built a good team." And it's, I guess I'm kind of thinking to myself, well, Kevin Adams hasn't made a move to this point because, well, it seems like he really likes his team, and he said it multiple times. And the coach obviously isn't going anywhere because he just returned, I think, at the behest of the owner. And then your team, after all that, like, if you really are a true team, you band together and you play for each other and you make a statement. And instead, what last night was, allowing a goal to the only team below you in the standings in the East in the first 19 seconds of the game, that was an indictment, not a statement. And it was a disgrace. I don't know any other way to say it.
Yeah. Yeah. And this playoff drought looks like it's going to hit 14 years and woof. And does not look like there's a easy fix. And if you're Kevin Adams, you don't want to necessarily be making moves from a position of weakness. I don't know what the hell they do next in Buffalo. I'm with you on that one. Last one before we let you go.
What situation is more anxiety inducing? Is it the Predators and the long-term darkness that they're staring down? Is it the lack of hope and direction in Buffalo? Is it the years and years of pain to come in Pittsburgh or on Long Island? I honestly, like, I don't know which one is the scariest.
Yeah. Yeah. I would say Buffalo because of how empty that building is and how Sabres fans are full on fed up after almost a decade and a half of this. I feel like it would be Buffalo, but they're all pretty close.
I would lean toward the Predators because now they're going to have to wallow in it. And if they didn't make it this year, it's hard to envision a path for them next year. And then this team with a bunch of players in their 30s is going to be older.
Yeah.
At least with the Sabres, you can kind of sell yourself on the idea that they're still the youngest team in the league. They've still got some good pieces. And maybe it just takes a different mixture to get it right. Because there is something there. It's just, this collection of parts is disjointed and they just can't defend. So it's a lot of things that are interconnected there, but I think they just need a few different faces and voices.
Last one. What are you hearing on the potential of a Vancouver Canucks move on their blue line? I know you talked a little bit about that on your Daily Faceoff live show a little earlier on this Wednesday.
Yeah, I think they're trying to make something happen. I mean, obviously, they're up against the clock. We are, I don't know, they said there would be no math. We're 16 hours right now as we speak from the trade freeze kicking in. Obviously, you see a couple deals happening tonight. Kaapo Kakko plus P.O. Joseph going back to Pittsburgh. So there is some stuff happening. I think the Canucks, at varying points over the last couple of days, felt like they had made some progress. I don't know what team it is, what players involved, but it does seem like there was some hope that they might be able to address before the holidays their need for a top four level contributor on their back end that is a more efficient puck mover. So sounds like a big ask and a tall order. It sounds like something that the Canucks have been after since the start of the season. We'll see if there's any urgency to get it done before the holidays.
Great stuff. As always, we will take next week off. We won't make it come on Christmas Eve or Christmas Day. Good luck hosting. We'll talk to you when, I guess we'll be talking, if I can do my math correctly, we'll talk to you on New Year's Eve.
Sounds good. Have a great holiday, everyone.
Happy holidays, Frank. Great stuff. We've appreciated it all year, my friend. And, yeah, have a Merry Christmas. Have some great time with your family and get a little time to relax. Appreciate it, pal.
Yeah, likewise. Thanks a lot. See you, Pat.
He's Frank Saravalli. He's our Daily Faceoff NHL insider. He joins us every week here on Flames Talk, and he joins us brought to you by our friends at South Trail Chrysler, where they always make the buying process simple. Look for the big Canadian flag at 130th Ave or visit southtrailchrysler.com.
Flames Talk is on the air and streaming on the Sportsnet mobile app. Sportsnet 960 The Fan, Calgary.
It's Steinberg and Vickers along with you on this Wednesday, December 18th. Flames talk coming at you from our Groundworks downtown studio. So the Flames lose 4-3 against Boston on Tuesday night in overtime. David Pastrnak, with a little less than 40 seconds to go, wins it. What do we make of what happened on Tuesday night? Some really good and some really not so good, hey, is kind of the way that I would look back on that loss for the Flames.
I would say 38% good, and then the remaining not so great. That first period from the Flames against the Bruins was some of the best hockey I've seen them play live in person this season, where they were absolutely smothering Boston. They were above pucks. Their forecheck was on point. Their offensive zone time was on point. Everything short of scoring in that first period was just chef's kiss from the Flames, and they really basically dictated that entire 20 minutes to a team that hasn't necessarily lived up to the hype or the potential, but is starting to find their way after a coaching change. They scored twice early in the second period, and then from there, it kind of just got away. I don't know if they thought that because the first 22-ish minutes were all, you know, sunshine and roses, that they'd be able to cakewalk the remaining, and Boston got to their game and really dictated the pace, dictated the play, dictated what they wanted to do, flip the script on the Calgary Flames. But there's some good, more bad, but you ended up coming away with at least, you know, you got a point out of it. It's a point lost, yeah, but at the same time, you didn't play your best for the majority of the game and still kind of got away with escaping with a single.
To me, that to me was one of those nights where you got a pretty good example of what happens when the Flames play the right way. And that was the first period into the second period, and a pretty good example of what happens when another team starts to push back and the Flames maybe don't handle it properly. And I think that's exactly what happened. I mean, Boston got to their game after Lindholm got them on the board. And I felt like the final, I don't know, 35 minutes of that hockey game was controlled by the Bruins, and the Flames get a point very much on the shoulders of Dustin Wolf, who I know he allows four, but I thought Wolf was probably their best player start to finish against Boston. I thought he was outstanding against the Bruins. And in that second and third period specifically, the two goals that go in on him in the third are both weird ones that change direction right to the open side of the crease, the 2.5 minutes apart. Otherwise, and at 3-3, he made a number of significant stops to make sure that Boston didn't take their first lead in regulation.
So for you, when you evaluate the game as a whole, the 64 plus minutes that it took, that it was played, was that a point the Flames coughed up, or was it a point that they managed to sort of take? Because conventional wisdom says, well, you're up by two going into the third period, you should come away with 2 points. They only get the one, but the fact that they were outplayed for 35-ish minutes makes it feel to me, and to your point about Dustin Wolf holding them in, makes me feel like, as much as you wanted to, one is a bit of a, I don't want to say an achievement for the Flames, but it certainly doesn't feel like that they had earned the full two.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's a point lost. The fact they got it to overtime, I thought, was big, and they almost got it to a shootout, which I don't know how it would have gone without Justin Kirkland in the lineup anymore.
Touche.
But yeah, I mean, I thought there was some good. I thought the first period, a large positive. Matt Coronato scoring another goal, a huge positive. Dustin Wolf's play, really important to see that. Even though he does not pick up the win back-to-back, I thought after the shutout, he followed that up with another very strong quality start. So those were all positives. But yeah, the amount... The high danger scoring chances in the second and third period, if I remember correctly, were 15-3 Boston.
I mean, that tracks with the eye test.
And 17-4 when you count in Boston's one power play. So 17-4 overall and 15-3 at 5-on-5. The Flames were pretty fortunate to get out of that one, even with a single point. And you know, maybe the part that I would be most frustrated with if I'm the coaching staff is that you know, they got a goal against the run of play. Ryan Lomberg, which it's crazy to think, but that was his first as a member of the Flames.
Yeah.
Ryan Lomberg's goal came very much against the flow. Like, Boston had taken that game over at 2-1, and the Flames were able to scalp one before the end of the period. And I thought, you know what, that could get a Bruins team quite frustrated. And if the Flames can get back to what they were doing in the first period, I think you can kind of, I don't know, frustrate the Bruins out of this game and get them to kind of, you know, wave the white flag and get ready for Edmonton on Thursday. Instead, the Bruins got a goal in the first 5 minutes, and that was the exact thing that you couldn't see happen, because that's just going to get the Jets rolling again. And so that was maybe a little frustrating, because despite the fact the Flames had a not so great last, you know, 12, 15 minutes of the second period, they were still in a good spot. They were up by two and they didn't clamp it down. But you know, they've been pretty good in that situation for most of the season, so it happens. But that would be maybe the most frustrating part, is that you did have to, when it's all said and done, rely on your goalie to get that game to overtime.
Well, and it was sort of a flip script the entire game, where the Flames found it right away in the first period and dictated the will, and then faded over the course of the game. And Calgary's third period has far and away been their best this season, but it was the opponent that was able to dictate that third period multi-goal come from behind victory to force overtime and then finish it off. Like, if we were to characterize, if the game had happened where the Flames won 4-3 after being down 3-1 entering the third period, I don't think we would have batted an eye, because it's not going to work for you every single game, but that's sort of the script we've seen them follow a lot of the times this season. So the fact that it came in the opposite order, where it was the opponent down heading into the third period, finding a way, pushing it into extra time, and then coming away with 2 points, felt like it was almost the Flames' own, I'm not going to say game plan, because the Flames' game plan isn't to start slow and build throughout and then have to find a way to have a comeback. But it felt like the way we've seen scripts go for the Flames this year, it was Boston executing it instead of Calgary.
Okay, so would you make any changes going into the game against Ottawa? And I asked that question because I do wonder a little bit about Andre Kuzmenko. When do you bring Kuzmenko back into this lineup? And I know that he is a hot button topic, but I do not think, despite the fact that, you know, I believe at this point there's a good argument to be made that Kuzmenko on a different team is going to be better for everybody. That isn't the case right now. And I don't think you can just have Kuzmenko sitting indefinitely. Now, he has been dealing with a minor injury. A lower body injury has kept him out the last couple of games, but he did full optional practice on Wednesday. He might be in a option. He might be available for them come Thursday. If he is, do you think about bringing him back in? Because I did not like Calgary's fourth line last night, despite the Lomberg goal. I thought they defended all night and did very little at the other end. I thought that was one of the rougher nights recently for the group of Dewar, Lomberg, and Rooney. If it's me, I'd be thinking about a way to bring Kuzmenko back in. And I don't know if that necessarily means putting him in Dewar's spot on the fourth line, but I would be seeing if Kuzmenko's healthy. I don't think you keep him sitting indefinitely. I do think healthy scratching him at times based on opposition can make some sense, but against the Senators team that I think you can generate on, I think it might be a good spot, if Kuzmenko's back to being able to play, might be a good spot to bring him back in for.
Yeah, I'll agree that you can't leave Kuzmenko in the press box until July 1 and then just a handshake and a best of luck to him. You got to get him back into games. For me, there's only two routes to do that, and that's either Dewar or Pelletier. And I say both of them because putting Kuzmenko on that fourth line right wing spot just doesn't work. He has to play in your top nine or he's not playing at all. So really right now, your only options are, okay, Dewar's on the fourth line right now. Do you move Pelletier down to that fourth line, take Dewar out to get Kuzmenko in, or do you just automatically put Kuzmenko in Pelletier's spot? For me, I'm okay extending this just a little bit in terms of the healthy scratch. If he is good to go, if he's not, well, then obviously it's just an injury-related scratch. But at some point, you have to get him in. For now, I'm okay with going Lomberg, Rooney, Dewar as the fourth and leaving Pelche in the top nine. But again, at some point, you're going to have Kuzmenko get back into the lineup, try to earn his way back into more minutes, and try to up his trade value, to be quite honest.
I would think about taking Dewar out for a game, maybe dropping Pelche down to that line and putting Kuzmenko back with Zeri and Sharon Govich. That's kind of,
that seems like the natural fit for me if I were to do it, is to have him with Zeri and Sharon Govich.
And I did not like the fourth line for a good chunk of the game against Boston. I thought Pelche had some good moments, but I also thought a couple of times maybe his puck management wasn't exactly where you want it to be. Sharon Govich, I thought, struggled again. So I don't know if you have to keep Zeri, Pelche, and Sharon Govich together. I could see, like, if you wanted to get... I just think you've got options on a night-to-night basis. Well, I don't think you need to be working with static lines. The Huberdeau and the Backlund line, they can be static.
Right.
But the bottom six right now, and I feel bad for Zeri because he's working his tail off trying to make things happen at center. Outside of the faceoff dot, he's done a lot of good things down the middle, I feel like. But I feel like there's some interchangeable parts on your third and fourth line. So if you moved Pelche to the fourth line, I don't think he deserves to come out necessarily.
Agree.
You go Pelche back with Lomberg and Rooney, have Dewar sit for a night and bring Kuzmenko back in. I'd have no problem with that.
I think that's really the only way you could work Kuzmenko back in, because for now I'm not messing with Kadri's line and I'm not messing with Backlund, Coleman, and Coronado. So that just leaves that Zeri line. And no disrespect, but Pelche is the least skilled player of the three players on that line. Kuzmenko is a skilled guy when he's on. So it would make sense to pop Kuzmenko into that spot. But I'll agree with you that I don't think Pelche should come out of the lineup altogether. So if you moved him back to the fourth line, put him on the left side, move Lomberg over to the right side, Dewar comes out, it cures it. But I would still give Dewar perhaps in that fourth line one more game as is to sort of bounce back from the Boston outing.
You've got a $5.5 million player. And I just think keeping that guy in the press box, doesn't matter how good an attitude Kuzmenko has. I'm going to play a clip from Craig Conroy in our chat with him on Tuesday in a second here. Doesn't matter how good an attitude a guy has, that I think can start to become a little bit of a distraction where, you know, one of your higher paid forwards who's struggling is now getting extended time in the press box. I just don't think it's as easy as, well, I'll just sit him. He doesn't deserve to play. You've got to get... While Kuzmenko is a member of the Flames, and I'm pretty confident in my opinion that I think whether it's Pittsburgh or the Rangers or wherever you want to look, I think moving him to another team, even if you're not getting a large return back, I think is best for the organization because it does extract a distraction. And it's better for Kuzmenko, who's a pending UFA and probably wants to have a contract in the NHL next year. Well, if it continues like this with the Flames, he's going to be in PTO or KHL territory. Like, give him a chance to get a contract next year. Get him a chance to prove that a change of scenery can get more out of him. I just think it's better for both sides. But I do think while he's here, you still have to get him in. See if you can boost the trade value a little bit. See if you can get some suitors to be interested. See if you can get him back on, even if it's for a 5 or 6 game stretch, if you can get him shooting it a little bit more. Here's the clip from Conroy I wanted to play. Craig Conroy joined us on Flames Talk on Tuesday. Last thing I asked him on Tuesday's interview, which is available wherever you get your podcasts right now, last thing I asked him was about Kuzmenko and where things sit right now.
This is one guy that nobody cares more than Andre. Like, he's in there working, shooting. You know, he's going through a little bit of a, you know, he's got a little bit of an injury right now. And he's a guy that we need to get back and get going and get that. I mean, when he came in last year, a little bit of a slow start, and then he really took off. I mean, you know, 14 goals in like 29 games last year and 25 points. That's impressive, you know, and we need to get him to get that confidence right now. You know, we want him to shoot more. You know, obviously he's got one of the best shots in the team, probably the best shot in the team. So, you know, those are things, but it's easier said than done. I can tell him to shoot, but if he doesn't, you know, that's tough. But I do think we get through this injury, we get him back, and we need to get him going again. And, you know, we need to find what's going to kind of spark him.
So I do think it's important to see if you can – Like, I don't think you can just enter lost cause territory with Kuzmenko. As much as you on the outside may want to be, it's a lost cause. It's never gonna, I don't think as a team you can do that. I think you need to, with all your guys, continue trying to see if you can get them going. And especially with a guy, you know, I keep going back to one of our regular texters, Mick, who continues to say, like, Kuzmenko has got the highest end skill on this team. You know, don't give up on him and see if you can get more out of him. And I think that's important to underline. I don't think you can just completely wash your hands of it and say, no, he's not going to work. He's not playing anymore. While he's here, you've got to see if you can make it work still.
Well, he's still a member of the Calgary Flames, so you do have to do whatever you can to get him rolling. He is one of your highest skilled players. When he does roll, he's nearly unstoppable. We saw the run near the end of the season where over the course, I think it was from March 18th onward, he was fifth in NHL scoring. So there is talent there that you do have to unearth. I feel like the injury issue has bought the Flames a little bit more time where he doesn't need to necessarily go in Thursday against Ottawa, but I can see the need to get him in sooner rather than later.
Okay, now, what about, I don't think we're there yet, but I don't know how far off we are. A couple people saying, okay, bring Kuzmenko back in, but what about Sharon Govich?
I don't think we're there yet.
I don't think we're getting that far off from...
from healthy scratch?
From having that conversation. I'm not there yet, but if this doesn't turn itself around... and we're still talking about this guy losing puck battles and not shooting it and
being on the outside,
killing cycles in a bad way. He has not been strong defensively. Sharon Govich looks like a complete shadow of the guy that lit the league up in the final two thirds of last season. Like, soft on pucks, losing board battles, like every time. Plays and cycles die on his stick right now because of it. He's double and triple clutching. I know he's dealing with confidence issues. I get that. And I want it to work because the guy is so dangerous. And when he's shooting it and confident, he might have the best shot on the team. He's definitely got the hardest shot to read on the team. How many times have we seen goalies just shrug their shoulders and saying, what the hell am I supposed to do with that? Like, there's no way goalies stop some of the shots that come off of his stick. But he's not working to get himself into those spots. He's not taking the shots. And he's now being more detrimental than he is impactful in a positive way. And so I don't think we're there yet. But if this doesn't start to turn a corner, I think that might be not like a, hey, you're out of the lineup, but let's just give you a little bit of a breather and let's just see if that reset can help you, because Sharon Govich on makes the team a significantly better team. The way he's going right now, it's kind of going the other way and he's kind of hurting him. And I want to see him figure it out because we know how much of a difference maker he can be.
Do you think the lower body injury is still bugging him? Do you think he came back too soon? Inopportune time, 4 minutes left in the final preseason game. He gets tangled up and goes down and misses the first, 2 weeks of the season. Do you think something there is either still lingering or either physically or mentally that's sort of having him be less impactful than he is right now?
I feel like mentally, yes. I do wonder if he came back early, too early from the injury. But I would imagine the physical side of it is now behind him.
Okay.
But I mean, he came back from injury, so that messed with the start of his season. Then he was flip-flopping between wing and center. Like, I get it. It has not been an ideal start to the season. But right now, for whatever the reasons are, he has to work himself out of it and quickly.
For me, I would ask him to use the holiday break, the Christmas break, as that mental reset, and then evaluate who he is once we get beyond Boxing Day. That's what I would do.
And that might be the way to do it. I don't know. But
it is night and day. It's a light switch compared to last year in terms of his impact.
We're talking about this in four or five games, though. I don't think it's out of the question to say, maybe taking a seat for a game. Again, not to punish, but to try to get him going. That would be the reason for it. Sharon Govich last year was one of their two or three most impactful offensive players. That has not been the case for the last month and a half.
1 point in his last nine. It was a goal, but 1 point in his last nine.
And he's not shooting it.
We're talking about a player that averages somewhere around 17 minutes a night.
So
I hear you. You're heard.
Yay.
I would just give it post
and that's fair.
Christmas break.
And I'm not suggesting do it against Ottawa. I'm not. I'm still a little ways away from like starting to the fact that we're even having the conversation illustrates where it is right now for him. Anyway.
6 goals, 8 points in 25 games. That's well off a 30-goal pace that he played at last year.
He's Aaron Vickers. My name is Pat Steinberg. We are underway this hour on Flames Talk. This hour of Flames Talk, the Sports Drive, brought to you by Calgary Lock and Safe. This Christmas, give the gift of security with smart locks and safes. Visit CalgaryLockandSafe.com.